This time last week, we were, I think we were on the road to Denver in some of the ugliest road construction I think I've ever seen. They had those concrete barriers, maybe half of a centimeter from the edge of the road, and they just went all over the place. But fortunately, we didn't have really heavy traffic. It was bumper to bumper, but it wasn't really heavy for Denver, and it wasn't raining. And so we made it there safe and sound, and really that was about the only rough patch we had on the trip. But we certainly appreciated everybody's prayers while we were gone. We truly had a good time. We finally got to play hill ball again for probably the first time in 3 years. I was asking the kids what their favorite part of it was, and a number of them, that was what they remembered, was the hill ball. Oddly enough, it ended up in a tie this year. It was 21-21, a hard-fought tie, and somebody once said a tie is kind of like kissing your sister. And so anyway, we got to kiss our sister afterwards and move on. But we had a very good time and a very safe time, and it was refreshing. It was nice to see the kids. We have really good young people, and you can be proud of them. I'm proud of them, and just really enjoyed the trip. It was a refreshment. If you have your Bibles, turn over to Jeremiah chapter 9 if you would like to follow along. If it's easier for you just to listen to follow along that way, certainly that's a great way to do it as well. But Jeremiah chapter 9. God is speaking through the prophet Jeremiah, and he just points out why they're going to undergo a punishment. He said, friend deceives friend. No one speaks the truth. They've taught their tongues to lie. They weary themselves with sinning. You live in the midst of deception. In their deceit, they refuse to acknowledge me, declares the Lord. Therefore, this is what the Lord Almighty says. See, I will refine and test them. For what else can I do because of the sin of my people? A lot of times when we see different things going on around us, our first inclination is to pray that God will take it away from us. But very often, I believe, certainly as we read back through the pages of the Bible and we get to read the history of the Bible, we see that the difficult times are often brought about by God. Now, we don't have modern day prophets, so we don't know exactly what the source of the things that are going on today is. And I don't want to imply that somehow we have a special knowledge that God is the one that is doing all this. And I think we see enough evil right now to where we know he's not doing the evil part. But in this particular instance, and in many others, there would come a time where it was so bad. He says they were wearying themselves in sinning. And he said, what else can I do but punish them? And so I just kind of wanted to use that as a springboard today to continue what we were looking at this morning, this idea of when things get so bad, there does come a point where hard times have to happen. And it's very important for us to figure out how we are going to deal with these hard times, because we're expected to do something. One of the things that I really believe is important is the opportunity to seek and save the lost during difficult times is often much greater than when people's lives are going along just fine. When the pantry is full, you don't pray to God for food as often, do you? Even though we're commanded to pray for our daily bread each day, sometimes we just don't feel that to be necessary. And so when things are going great, sometimes people are not as inclined to turn to God. But when difficult times come, when confusing times come, when trying times come, people very often will turn to God, and this is an opportunity to be able to help them. We are not scalp hunters. We're not trying to go out and somehow count coup on other people, or whatever you want to use for the phrase of that. We just simply want to help people in their difficulties, and the only one that can help them in any type of spiritual difficulty is God. And so our duty is to bring them to God. And again, this idea of where God just presents the question to the people, what else can I do because of your sin, is essentially what he said. And so it's with that in mind that we jump into the lesson tonight. If you'll recall from Esther chapter 4, when the Jews were threatened with annihilation, and Mordecai came to Esther and warned her and asked her to talk to the king about this, and she just indicated, he might kill me. I don't have the right to go into his presence unless summoned. And the response, I think, to Esther is one of the things that we really ought to have on our hearts when he said this, "Who knows but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this." I've often wondered why we live where we do in the times we do. I've wondered why I wasn't born in poverty in Africa, or born to a group of rabid Muslims over in the Middle East, or whatever it was. Why were we so fortunate to be born in a country that is wealthy, and very often to parents who were Christians, when others didn't have that opportunity? And of course, we'll never be able to answer that question. We're blessed. To whom much has been given, much is expected. But as Acts pointed out, there are things where it says, talking about God, he determines the time set for them and the exact places they should live. And again, whether he's talking about every individual or just some individuals, whether he's just talking about the nations or some nations, I'm not really sure. But it may very well be that he plans for each individual where you need to be for the best chance for you to be saved. And also, and we really want to emphasize this, the best chance for you to serve. Because we are here on this earth to be served. And so the next passage that I want to look at is one we have looked at several times recently. I've tried to kind of dwell on big themes this year. And so it's true we've been looking at some areas maybe more than I've typically done over the last quarter century. Bless your hearts. 2 more years and refreshment will come for you as well. But in Daniel chapter 1, this is one of those big themes, I believe, that will help us understand how God wants us to act. Daniel chapter 1, and I'm going to read a fairly long passage here. If you'd follow along with me, whether you read along or just listen, is fine. Daniel 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among some who were from Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave new names to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. And then look at verse 9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So I agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. Now look what was done for them. To these four men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked to them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. There's a lot there. But the first thing that we notice is they were honored tremendously. We also see they were from good families, royal families in some instances. And so these were children of privilege, if you could call it that, when you think about what all that Jerusalem had been undergoing for the last number of years. It wasn't a very pleasant time to live, certainly, and then they were dragged off into captivity. But they were sharp people. They were good-looking people, it says. They were honored. There's nothing like being honored, is there? I can remember from time to time when one of our children was presented with some kind of an honor, and we felt that too, because we knew that the honor really belonged to us. They were just the coincidental recipients of it. But there is something to be just kind of singled out by people who are in charge. And here they had the opportunity. They could say, honestly, they were considered to be the best of the best and the brightest. And yet, immediately a compromise comes along. Unclean food and drink. Are they going to take it? But notice how they handled it. They didn't puff themselves up. They didn't answer in a surly way to the officials. They didn't say, we're not going to do this, and there's nothing you can do to make us do it. Instead, they started off by asking permission. And I think this is one of the most important things that we can gain as far as a lesson from this first chapter is when those who are in rightful authority, whether they are good men or evil, but when those who are in rightful authority come to us and ask us to do something or even insist, command us to do something that we cannot do, the first thing to do is to treat them with courtesy and respect and the honor that's due their position, even if it's not due them, and to request, can I be excused from this? And then the very next thing they did was negotiate. They said, they asked, could we not eat this food? And the man in charge said, I'd lose my head. And so they said, well, essentially, what about this? How about if you try us for 10 days? They were to go through this for 3 years. So 10 days was less than 1% of the total time. It's a reasonable request. Just look at us. Just see what happens in 10 days. And if you don't like that after 10 days, then you can decide. In verse 13, compare our appearance with that of the young men that eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. Notice that there was no insinuation that if it didn't work in 10 days, that they would then give in and they would then sin. They just said, try us for 10 days and look, see for yourself. Then you can decide what needs to be done. And because God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to them, he did. Gave him a chance. And it worked. And so for the next 3 years, they were able to go through the training as a proper servant of God should, without compromise. And because of that, God rewarded them. Not only did the king reward them with a position within the kingdom that was probably higher than any of the other young men, but God blessed them. First with knowledge, and then it appears that he blessed them again with greater knowledge and understanding, and Daniel could even understand visions and dreams of all kinds. But that's the first thing. There may very well be things that come up. I mentioned this morning there have been some proclamations from our Supreme Court. They have forgotten themselves. They've forgotten the oath to the Constitution that they have taken, and they have twice in the last month decided that a state could limit the number of people that were at worship, even though the Constitution clearly says that they cannot do such a thing. there is not only a right to assembly, but when it comes to religion, when it comes to the worship of God, they're to stay out of it. And so they decided that they would violate the Constitution. They would violate their oath. It tells you a lot there. What are we going to do about it? Because it could happen here. How will we handle it? Well, the first thing that we need to do is treat those who are in proper authority with the proper respect and ask, can we do this? Not intimating for a moment that somehow that we will then sin if they don't like what we're doing, if they come to a different conclusion, but just stating, look, try this, look at it, and then you do what you think you need to do at that point. But again, the courtesy was, and the respect and the honor was impressive. Daniel chapter 3 now shows where when an edict is issued that you can't do anything about what you need to do. In Daniel chapter 3, as you start going through that, you see that King Nebuchadnezzar made an idol of gold. And there was a decree that was issued when the music sounded that everyone had to bow down and worship this idol of gold. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, would not fall down and worship the idol. They knew the penalty for worshiping an idol over worshiping God, that you could not do both, and so they just didn't do it. I don't think they drew attention to themselves. There's no indication in this instance that they drew attention to themselves, but they were observed, at the very least, not worshiping the idol. I don't know where Daniel was at this time. I assume that he was not present at this time, because Daniel was not part of it, and what we know about Daniel, there is no way he would have knelt down to an idol. But Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were there. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were called before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he was furious. And he asked him, is it true that you won't worship my God? And he gave him one more chance. When the music sounds, you bow down and worship them. But if you don't, you'll be thrown into a fiery furnace. And so they didn't even get to the point where they got to play the music. They just said, we can't do it. And the God we serve is able to rescue us. But even if he doesn't, I love the fact that they were not presumptuous. They didn't say that God will rescue us for sure. They just indicated that he was able to rescue them. But if he didn't, they still wouldn't compromise. They didn't know because they hadn't talked to God, but they did know that they could not do that, and so they made the stand. They were confident. They trusted God to do the right thing, and they took their stand. Verse 19, Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. They were of highly esteemed by him until this point. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual. Now, I don't know about you, but if I saw that and I was about to be tossed in, I'd be really happy. Because if you know anything about fire, the hotter it is, the quicker you die. And so he ordered it 7 times hotter than usual. But then he commanded some of his strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So he was really mad and he wasn't thinking clear. Because when he did that, some of his strongest men in his army perished because it was so hot. But then in verse 21, these men wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes were bound, thrown into the fire or the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot, the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement. I can remember reading this to the kids when they were little, and I would always leap to my feet at that point. That was when I could jump higher than a credit card. And, oh, they just love that. They talk about that today. I'm not going to leap to my feet. But you've seen somebody leap to their feet in amazement, and you understand this. And he asked his advisors, weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire? They replied, certainly, O king. Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed. And the 4th looks like a son of the gods. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted. He was smart enough not to get right in the opening since he'd just seen people die. And he shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And look how he addresses them. Servants of the Most High God, come out, come here. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire. The satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched. There was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him, and he defied the king's command and were they can excuse me and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way." And then he promoted him. And so this one, I believe, is really where the rubber kind of hits the road. In the first instance, they asked permission. They were given it. Everything turned out good. The second time, there was no permission to be asked. The law had been passed. There was nothing they could do other than either violate their responsibility towards God or disobey the command. And so they did. And they literally got thrown into the fire because of it. But God rescued them. And not only did he rescue them, but he caused the rest of this nation, at least the leader of this nation, to praise God because of it. And that's the second part. In the life that we live, in the responsibilities that we have from time to time, there will come times where we have to decide whether we're going to serve God or man. We're going to have to decide whether we bend the knee, so to speak. You may have heard that recently. To God or men. We can't do both. There are too many people who think you can. And if you refuse to do it to men or to the idols of men today, it may cost you something. There may be a threat to your life. And so you're going to have to be determined to take a stand for God, no matter what it means. We read just a few chapters later where Daniel was thrown into the lion's den for the same reason. And it's interesting when you read that story because he did draw attention to himself. An edict was made, and Daniel, instead of slipping around, he opened the windows so that they could see him worshiping God. He didn't do it to be seen of men so that he could be praised. Jesus said what he thought about that. When you pray, go into your house and into an inner room and close the door. He wasn't saying don't pray in public. He was just saying you don't pray to be seen of men. So was Daniel violating that when he did that? And the answer is no. He did it so that men could praise God. And there are going to be times in your life where you're going to need to take a stand where people see you praising God. Or we might find it at some later time that we were displeasing to God. But there's a lot of things. The point of all this, there are difficult times right now. We can whine and we can complain about it. We can be scared to death if we want. We can be mad if we want. We can react to it in a lot of different ways if we want. But if instead we'll just think, maybe God put me in this time and this place for this, how does he expect me to react? And then do it to the best of your ability, whether you have the opportunity to do so with grace and dignity because you're dealing with somebody who is graceful and dignified, or whether they're going to come back at you with everything they got and try to kill you and maybe even kill you. Will you take your stand? And will you do it in the right way? There's a lot to be learned, I think, from these passages in Esther and Daniel. And yet, at the same time, while there's some cautions to be considered, I think there's a lot of encouragement here as well. God will use you in this life for as long as he wants. You don't have to worry about somebody taking you out of God's service before God is ready for you to be taken out of his service. That's between God and them. Your duty is to serve God to the best of your ability, to be faithful even to the point of death, and God will take care of the rest. And I'll close the same way I did this morning. Revelation chapter 2, verse 10. Don't be afraid of what you're about to suffer. The devil will put some of you into prison to test you. You'll suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I'll give you the crown of life. That's what we're living for. We're living for eternity. We're not living for these few years that we have here on earth. We are living for eternity. Will you live well during the few years you've got here to show God that you wish to serve Him in His way for as long as you have? Or will you succumb to the fear and the anger and the anxieties and everything else that this life holds? Will you be faithful? The invitation's open. If you need to respond, won't you do that while we stand and sing?